The Lost Madonna by Denise Gao. Prato, near Florence, 1436. A gaunt-eyed girl, wearing a tattered brown tunic, her head and shoulders covered by an olive-green shawl, moved, unseen through the village square, like a feral cat stalking its prey. A hungry goat bleated in the distance, covering the sound of wind escaping her emaciated belly. The morning sun started to scorch its way across the cobblestones and onto the gathering crowd as they sweated with a heady mixture of fear and excitement, ready for the day's execution. The noble ladies gathered in their shaded balconies, carefully hidden behind elegant lattice screens and shutters. Their silken dresses of mauves and purples shimmered through the vertical slats, creating a colorful kaleidoscope effect. The wealthy men and women collected in their box seats as the tradesmen, along with the occasional pockmarked prostitute, gathered in the street below. But it was mainly men who filled the square to witness the burning of witches. The feeble girl kept her head low and most of her face covered with her headscarf, staying anonymous in the crowd. Hidden in the folds of her rags, agitating at her leg, she held a blade and weaved through the line of hecklers, looking, searching for someone, yet careful not to be seen, not letting anyone's gaze catch hers, lest they see she's frantic. Poor people don't have business. They are just slaves to others' needs and all those wealthier than themselves. Last night, by the moonlight, she had washed herself in the brown river, rubbed the soles of her feet with wild lavender flowers, just enough so she didn't smell of the pigs she'd been living with, but not too much or she would smell sweet. Her headscarf slipped, and the last strands of her golden red hair fell onto her shoulders. Her inheritance, her mother used to call it, now gone. A grubby tanner noticed her. "Gardala!" he said, and nudged the arm of his friend standing next to him, wearing a stained leather apron. His eyes glimmered as he sucked back his ale, anticipating a baiting match. The tanner licked his lips and stood wide on his legs, his haunches tightening. She was heading for a trap, and fear spiked through her. A peculiar roar made the tanners turn to see a foreigner arriving with his bear, which held their attention. Given this chance, the girl winnowed her way backwards, just as some of the weavers and dyers arrived with their mastiffs, yanking on their chains, slobbering, eager to attack the bear and eat out its eyes. They paraded their dogs around the square, heading for the man and his chained bear. She had to wait for them to pass and was trapped between them and the tanners. Then she saw Pepe Grosse and just froze for a moment, holding her breath. Finally, able to turn and put him and the tanners behind her, she retreated. Through blurred vision, she scanned the fine houses at the corner by the Palazzo Nuovo. Their overhanging balconies created long, dark shadows, and underneath she could see a place to hide. Slowly, she wound her way and slipped into the cool darkness. Holding onto the wall for support, a little wattle crumbled away under her fingers and her leg shuddered. She'd been running for so long, part of her didn't know how to stop. Suddenly, there was movement, and she started. At the veranda opposite, She saw rich colors flashing, dancing, making her feel dizzy. It was the noblewomen gathering in the overhanging balcony. Their silk dresses speckled and shone as they passed behind the latticework. Her heart pained when she looked at those rich hues. Her mother had risked her life trying to obtain shells for the dye to make just one of those colors. They had had to make do with earthy browns and greens, which came from animal urine and scraps of iron. That's why she knew Pepe Grosse. She used to beg him for scraps of rusty iron for their mordant. A rumble above came from a servant threading thin branches of marjoram and oregano into the fretwork to protect her ladies from evil spirits. Several dry leaves sprinkled to the street below, wafting their scent. One of the women detected the girl in rags, looking up at them, and scampered back inside the turret. Their servant knocked on the framework. "Shoo!" she said. Quickly, the girl cowered deeply into the shadows, merging with the darkness until she was truly invisible. A commotion began in the square. The owner of one of the killing dogs was putting a ragged cloth to its nose. Acid formed in her mouth as she recognized it could be one of her own mordant-stained aprons. They knew she would come, and they were giving the killing beast her scent. Knowing she'd be torn to pieces by the fighting dogs, her legs juttered beneath her, and she slipped. When she noticed the warm feces she had stepped into, she remembered the Romanys and what they did, and quickly she smeared the sticky stools up her legs and some over the top of her bare head where sweat was seeping out. That's what the hunters did in the woods. They knew an animal wouldn't hurt its own kind and always smeared their droppings over themselves to hide their own scent. She was going to cross herself, but stopped. As she realized she was turning from the hunted to the hunter and didn't want God to see that. In the square, two Caucasian slaves arrived to set the fire, their faces blackened with soot. They placed a nest of dry bracken in a circle round the stake made from roughly hewn linden wood. They nervously tucked feathery fennel leaves under the twigs to fend off curses and witches' spells. The wooden platform began to creak under their feet. Some peasants laughed, and others began to chant, "Where's the witch? Bring on the witch!" A toothless woman cackled and curled up her fingers to make those around her laugh. They were impatient and wanted their sport. The slaves lit some twigs, and soon the kindling began to crackle and burn. Before departing, to create a good show, they threw a dusting of devil's dung over the top of the kindling, which instantly flared, emitting a noxious smell, giving the audience a foretaste of the burning to come. The crowd jeered impatiently as the fire stoked slowly, waiting for its human feast.
"Calde, calde, calde, calde,"
a voice sing-songed, coming from a young boy, fancily dressed with red cap and tunic adorned with gold emblems. He moved through the workers, offering his warmed almonds, sweeteners, and treats from the Del Bondio family. Trundling behind him, a second young man in red tunic pushed a shining black cart with a barrel of ale, also painted with the gold family crest. A small monkey on top clapped its tiny hands. They were doing good business. Finally, the witch was dragged brutally onto the platform. The sinewy body barbed, battered and bruised, was barely recognizable as Rosalia, a woman from the village. The girl in the shadows retched, and vomit poured onto her bare feet. She wiped her mouth and pulled herself up straight. Her eyes darted here and there, searching the back of the crowd, her heart pounding. A fevered slave sawed at Rosalia's hair with a rusty knife and threw each handful onto the kindling, which stoked the heat, producing angry flames.
"Witch!" the mass brayed. "Bitches! Burn all the witches!"
they chanted even louder. The condemned woman's curses were so loud that the slaves backed off, terrified. As the flames started to blister her feet and roast her calves, she spat into the crowd. A lump of phlegm landed near the feet of a man standing beside Pepe Crossi. "He's come. He's here." And like an arrow fired from a spring-loaded crossbow, the young girl surged out from her cover, brandishing a blade, ready to kill or be killed. Immediately, from nowhere, a figure lunged at her, grabbed her neck, smothered her mouth, and pulled her backwards. The feral girl elbowed her attacker's ribs and tried to bite her powerful hands at her jaw. Overpowered, she was dragged back into the shadows, where she was forced to the ground by her attacker and the blade wrenched from her hand. "Shh," the assailant whispered. Working quickly, using the corner of her apron, the stranger wiped tears from the girl's eyes and stroked her face, clearing away lumps of vomit. "Shh," she said, trying to soothe her. "She is free now. She is whispering to you. Be brave. Be strong. She wants you to live. Shh. In time you will forget." But the woman could do nothing to mitigate the sound of Rosalia's visceral screams, nor protect the girl from the sickly sweet smell of her mother's burning flesh. With a clatter of footsteps fast approaching, the woman pressed a keepsake icon into the girl's frail hands, then pushed her. "Get away from here. Quickly!" This sample chapter, read by Patricia Mahoney, written by Denise Gao, produced by Denise Barham at the Pie Factory.